This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 3 days after the election, the Texas Board of Education met to approve new health textbooks for high school and middle school students. They instructed publishers to rewrite one passage to define marriage as a lifelong commitment between a man and a woman. In the sex education section, abstinence will be taught as the only effective means to prevent pregnancy or sexually transmitted diseases. Religious conservatives applauded the changes as upholding both family values and Texas state law. Some educators and public health advocates argued that both changes inject religion into the classroom. Texas is hardly the only state debating the role of religion in public school. In Cobb County, Georgia, the issue is stickers on science textbooks that call evolution a theory, not a fact. In Little Rock, Arkansas, a federal judge will decide whether Christian prayers included in a graduation ceremony violate the law. Later in this program, an update on Ukraine, where the dispute over the presidential election threatens to erupt into violence. But first, religion in public schools. If you're a student, teacher, school board member, or a parent, give us a call. Do religious values have any place in the classroom, and whose religious values? Who should decide? If this is an issue where you live, give us a call. Our number, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Laura Williams, the 5th and 6th grade health and PE teacher at Mary Orr Intermediate School in Mansfield, Texas. She's also head of the district's adoption committee that looks at textbooks, and she's with us by phone from her office at the school. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
I understand you were in favor of these changes to the textbooks. How come?
I approve of the way that they were addressed as far as the... Our school has adopted an abstinence policy. Our district has. Our school board decided a few years ago that abstinence is what we would teach as a school, as mm-hmm. school district.
And on the issue of marriages, a lifelong commitment between a man and a woman?
Same. That would be something that we had approved as a district.
So you see this, if I'm hearing this correctly, as an issue of local control?
Yes, I do. I went to the state adoption meeting in Austin, and that was one of the things that our legislators, several, spoke on, is how important it was to put the control in the hands of the district.
And by adoption committee, obviously textbooks, not children, is what we're talking about here.
Right. Yes.
And I just wanted to ask, some people, as you know, say this kind of language injects religion and a particular set of beliefs into the school. First of all, do you agree with that?
Well, I don't think it's really a religious issue, because students who have had concerns about the things that we taught in our health curriculum, if they had any concerns, usually it was that we were going to, inform them with what they would say, too much information.
Mm-hmm.
That they felt like that should be addressed at home with them and their own child. So the concerns in our district, and it seems, a lot of middle America, and not necessarily because of religious reasons, but because of family values, is that, there are certain things the school should address, and the other things should be, those other concerns should be addressed at home.
Would it be also fair to say there are some in Texas who have been quoted as saying that what was in the textbooks previously that was neutral on these issues was in fact not neutral, that it was in fact people from far off New York trying to tell the people in Texas how they should raise their children?
Well, that's kind of how we felt about those of us who were on that side of the issue felt, a concern that people were, like you say, addressing us and saying, well, you need to tell this, whereas, most of the, and I would say a large percentage of our parents would say, that's not something we want. We feel like the school system should be teaching.
So that there was a set of beliefs that were in there that you thought were from outside, basically.
Yes, we did feel that way. We felt that most of our parents, obviously by what the school board set down, would say, no, we feel like the family values and that systems that we, our beliefs, should be taught mm-hmm. in that way.
An editorial in a Texas newspaper this summer pointed out that 15 to 17-year-old girls in Texas have the nation's highest pregnancy rate, And though marriage is described as a lifelong commitment in these new textbooks, the divorce rate in Texas is still rather high. Do you anticipate any difficulty explaining the contradiction to students?
I don't, because I feel like part of that may be the education that a lot of girls and, you know, young people don't receive as far as how important it is for abstinence. I think a lot of times kids are said, well, if you use a certain kind of contraception that you won't get pregnant. Well, that's not true, you know. So I think, you know, the only way to definitely prevent an unwanted pregnancy is abstinence.
Mm-hmm. So as a teacher and a mother are too, are there other areas where you feel religious values or family values that should be reflected in the curriculum?
Well, I think that's one thing we've also tried to address in our district as well is things like honesty, trustworthiness. You know, that's things that, you know, school districts teach, as you know, and we're helping the parents. We're complementing one another by teaching our kids, you know, family values and honesty and other things like that that are important for all of us to have.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you look back on this process, who ended up having the biggest voice in deciding what got put into the textbooks?
I'm not sure what.
Was it the members of the boards of education? Was it parents? Was it teachers? What was it? The textbook editors and publishers?
I believe the editors and publishers, you know, sat down.
They wrote the textbook.
They wrote the textbook, obviously, but a lot of the teaks or the things that we teach were addressed in that. And one of the teaks say the things that we teach, the skills that the kids need to have when they finish the classes that they take, would say abstinence is, mm-hmm. you know, one of the areas that we teach. I mean, that's what our take say at this point.
Mm-hmm. In terms of Texas, obviously a very big and very diverse state, do you think that what's appropriate for your school there in Mansfield is appropriate in Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth?
Well, and that's one good thing about the textbooks that these publishers did, I thought, was that they have provided a lot of supplemental materials. So, you know, what that was one of my concerns was that in the textbook, you know, you've got kids that, you know, I mean, let's be honest, they flip to what they want to see. So if you put things in there that kids are just flipping straight to or whatever, you know, there'd be some parents that were offended by that. Whereas if you have supplemental material and you feel, then each individual teacher can, or each individual school district, and then the teacher can say, here's some of the supplements that we choose to use with our students. So it can be, you know, you can address whatever population that you have, and however you know, those feel the need to address it. That's great. I mean, there's plenty of different things that they have in there that have a lot of things that could be discussed, you know, especially for the older kids. You know, mm-hmm. Maybe your high school students are certainly going to have a different set of information that you would, you know, convey to those kids than the younger kids.
But am I hearing you right to say that at least in middle school, you're afraid that some of the boys will jump ahead to the sex ed materials?
Well, I know they will.
Nudge, nudge, wink,
right.
Wink.
Yeah, let's check out, you know, what's in here. So,
okay. Can you take a call with us?
Sure.
If any of you listening would like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's hear from Mary, who's with us from New London, New Hampshire.
Hi. I guess I just want to say I've been listening to this controversy on NPR and what's going on in Pennsylvania and Georgia, and I just have to say, and I have to say that I'm really very spiritually and religiously inclined as well. But there's a reason for church and state. There's a reason for the separation. And religious beliefs, I believe, should be talked about in the home and should be talked about within your church, in your ministry. It has no place in public school because there's such a variant of people in this country and so many different kinds of religions. And and frankly, there's no evidence. There's nothing to show that, you know, except our faith. There's nothing to show that God or Christ created the world in 7 days or whatever. but there's so much science behind this Darwinian theory. And I'm just thinking to myself, what is going on here? This is we're 2004, and we're still battling this? Church and state, we just need a separation.
Mm-hmm. Laura Williams, I wonder if you have a reply to that.
Well, to me, I don't see it as a religious issue, really. I see it more as a family value issue and what parents individually would like to teach their own kids. And for us, for one to, you know, in our particular district, that is important to us is a value that we would like to uphold. And it's not necessarily a religious, you know, Judeo-Christian value. I mean, it's more of a family value type thing where we would say, hey, you know, there's only certain things that the school should be teaching, and then everything else should be left to the parents. So I don't really see it necessarily as a religious issue, as a value issue.
Do you understand those, like our caller Mary, who does?
I understand, sure, that is a concern of hers, and I'm certainly of the same persuasion that kids should be offered different options, of course. But I don't really necessarily see this as a religious option. I don't know. It's more of a family value.
And where do those family values come from? Your the raising in the home, or does it come from, at least in part, from religion?
I mean, I don't necessarily see it as a religious issue. I see it more, like you say, as a family value.
Okay. Mary, did
how to say that? I mean, because you know, I think a lot of our kids we've got lots of different religions at our schools. So I don't necessarily, you know, and I've had several parents who are of different religious persuasions that have had the same concerns. So
okay. Mary, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Laura Williams, thank you for your time today. We know you're busy.
Thank you.
Laura Williams teaches 5th and 6th grade health and PE at Mary Orr Intermediate School in Mansfield, Texas, and she joined us by phone from her office at the school. With us now is Ken Greenewalt. He's the author of the soon-to-be-released book, Does God Belong in Public Schools? Also a university professor at Columbia Law School. He's with us from their bureau in New York City, and it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much.
So we're talking about sex education and marriage as they're to be taught in schools in Texas. Are these the most prominent religious issues that public schools are grappling with right now?
Well, I think the most prominent issue probably is evolution and creationism, the one that gets the most publicity. I think the most significant issues, I think, are about how much religion should be taught. It's clear that public schools can't teach religious truths as truths, but they can teach about historical influences of religion on culture and even about religious doctrines, so long as they're not teaching those doctrines as the truth.
So it's evolution, creationism, and intelligent design. We'll be talking about all that a little bit later. I wonder, the Pledge of Allegiance, the under God, that sort of came up before the Supreme Court. And the other issue that's come up sort of outside of schools, the display of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, well, those are both significant legal issues. I think for the entire nature of public schools, that neither of those is nearly as important as what you've just been talking about and the evolution creationism issue and the teaching about religion issue.
And the issue of prayer in public schools, has that been pushed to the periphery or is that still central?
I think a lot of people feel strongly about it. As a lawyer, I guess I think that's pretty much been resolved, and it's been resolved that you can't have prayers in public schools.
We'll have more on all of this after we come back from a short break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about whether and if religion has a place in public schools. If so, when? And we're taking your calls. Is this an issue in your school or your community? We'd like to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Ken Greenewalt, the author of Does God Belong in Public Schools? And I wonder, Professor Greenewalt, is the issue of religion in schools, if you had to look at it over the past 10 years, I mean, I guess the issues may have changed somewhat over that time, but in general, is the debate as hot as it used to be, or less so, more so?
I think it's as hot as it used to be, and these things that you've been talking about, the Georgia sticker and the Texas initiative, and the sort of general debate about creationism and intelligent design are very intense right now. And I think the Pledge of Allegiance was quiescent, and that's come up. So that's created a lot of intense controversy.
Okay. Let's get some more listeners involved in the conversation. And Shirley is with us from Jackson, Michigan.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. You're on the air. Go ahead.
I have taught school for over 30 years. This has been a real issue as far as, I would say, more so in the recent years. In the high school that I am in now, I have a diversity teaching group, and we have prayer every time we meet. We have rehearsals. We have prayer before rehearsals. We have prayer clubs in our school. This is all strictly, of course, a volunteer thing, so it's not forced on, you know, any child. As far as our graduation is concerned, that was cut out. I definitely disagree with all of this new stuff. I agree with your first guess that we have gone down as a country moral-wise. Whether people agree with it or not, when we took God out of the schools, we took prayer out, we took Bible reading out, we opened the door for what we have now, that we didn't have killings and shootings and all the disrespect. And I agree that it starts in the home, but what people have to understand is a lot of these kids are coming not from solid homes, not even coming from home. Some of these kids are on their own. They're not taught respect. And I feel like if it's not done in the home, then the morals sometimes have to be taught, I feel like, in the school. Now, as far as religion is concerned, I don't believe that anybody has the right to just force a particular religion. I wouldn't want that with my children, but I do believe that morals need to be taught, children need to be taught respect, and I think that if children want to pray in school, I think they should be allowed to pray in school. I've just seen the difference in my years of teaching and when we had it and when we didn't have it. Now we've opened the door, we've taken God out, and anytime you take God out of anything, you're asking for chaos. And that's what we have in our schools now, that's what we have in our communities now, that's what we have in our homes now. And I'm all for having prayer in school. I'm all for having Bible reading in school. I read my Bible in school. My children read the Bible in school, like on their own. And we still have kids that do that. We have kids that meet for prayer in the morning. And nothing is said about it because they're doing it, you know, on their own.
And
but
Shirley,
I definitely against just saying away with it. I don't agree with that at all.
And just to clarify, the school you teach in is a public school.
Is it a public school? Yes.
And I was just also going to add 30 years in a public school. I hope you're going to get something more than a gold watch at the end of that. Thank you.
All right.
The country thanks you. Shirley, we appreciate the phone call.
Okay, you're welcome.
Ken Greenewalt, Shirley is hardly alone.
Well, I understand that. And actually, I oversimplified things. It's perfectly all right to have prayer groups in schools, voluntary clubs, which are organized and not sponsored by the schools. The prayers that are not all right, according to what the Supreme Court has said, the prayers that are not all right are ones that are sponsored by the schools, whether it's a beginning prayer in the morning or a graduation prayer or even a prayer at a football game. There was a case involving prayer at football games. So that's what's not permitted. And I think that's the law as it presently stands. Certainly people can disagree about that. In the history of public schools, if one goes back to the 19th century, the material was taught from a non-denominational Protestant perspective, and there were prayers and Bible readings all the time. So certainly there have been stages in the country's history where things are quite different from what the law presently is now.
And so as this debate continues, though, you do have people like Shirley who say, look at the decline in by any number of indicators of society over the last 30 years or so, her experience, as God has been taken out of the classroom. Issues of localism, as they were expressed by our first guest, Laura Williams in Texas. Why should textbook publishers in places like New York be telling our children what to believe? And then again, these much broader issues, First Amendment issues, about religion and separation of church and state.
Well, this is extremely complicated. Causes and effects are very difficult to trace. I'd say the culture has become much more tolerant, and it's become much more just to minority groups and women in the last 30 or 50 years as well. So I think there have been some very positive things. It's interesting that the United States is a far more religious country than the Western European countries, most of which, if not all of which, have some form of established religion. And I think there's a very strong argument to be made that when the government isn't promoting religion, religion actually flourishes better. So that would be my view of it, but I can certainly understand people disagreeing about that. On the Texas thing, I was amused sitting here in New York hearing her say that they didn't want to be imposed on by people from New York. I think as whether it's moral or religious, I think that what we've got really are moral views that are, I think, as you put it, substantially formed by religious conviction. So it's really an interweaving of morality and religion. It's not a matter of religious doctrine per se, but it is a question of a moral view that's substantially informed by religion.
Let's get a caller in on this question. Jeremy is with us from Somerset, New Jersey.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
Thanks for having me on the air.
Okay.
I'm a first-year English teacher in New Jersey, and I just wanted to question the use of the term family values, and to what extent is that really a euphemism for religious values, and where do we draw the line? You know, I teach in a predominantly Christian district, and I feel that the family values that are being taught are heavily infused with Christian values.
On the other hand, Jeremy, I assume everybody teaches their kids that killing is wrong, but that's also part of the Ten Commandments.
Right. So, true.
Yeah.
True. So, I'm not saying that every Christian value is wrong, but by any means, I'm questioning, you know, where do we draw the line between, you know, what is a family value and to what extent are these family values infused with religious values?
Kent Greenwald, as you've looked at this issue, is family values code?
Well, I think it's complicated. I guess where I would draw the line is the following. Is the moral position one that people could reasonably take independent of religious beliefs? And on the idea that abstinence is the safest means of avoiding pregnancy, well, I think that's obviously true. Now, maybe that's not all you should say, but one could certainly subscribe to that without coming at it from a religious point of view. If we had a moral position that one would say, look, nobody could believe in this moral position unless they believed in this particular religion, then I think the connection between religion and morality is so close that teaching the moral value comes very close to teaching the religion. But of course, religion and morality have always been mixed up. And turning to the a marriage between different genders of the same gender, mm-hmm. one could say, well, look, in cultures throughout history, let me just say straight out, I feel a little bit uncomfortable about gay marriage. I'm old enough to feel a little bit uncomfortable about it, but I think it should be allowed as a matter of justice. That's my own personal position. But if you look at cultures throughout history, I think all of them, or almost all of them, have involved marriage between men and women. So one could say, well, look, that must be some indication that that's the better way to go and so on. So I think one could subscribe to that position without coming at it from a particular Christian or other biblical point of view.
Would it be so terrible? And Jeremy, you get in on this too. Would it be so terrible for a textbook to say, you know, well, you know, there's this, but other people think differently?
Well, I think that's exactly what should be said.
Jeremy, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with presenting options and as many different opinions as possible. But I think when you get to something like, for example, you know, you mentioned earlier the Pledge of Allegiance, that to me seems fairly one-sided as an atheist, you know. You know, there's not much option in there.
No, I suspect not. I guess the Supreme Court is going to have to decide that one when it actually comes back. They sort of ducked the issue last session. Jeremy, thanks. Did you want to ask?
Well, could I say a word about the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure.
I think it's interesting. The three justices actually reached the merits of that case, and all three of them thought the pledge was all right, having the under God was all right. The view that I think is probably going to be dominant when the court finally decides the issue is one that Justice O'Connor expressed. And she said, well, under God has lost all religious meaning. It's really a form of ceremonial deism, and it's really just a patriotic exercise now that doesn't carry real religious significance. I think that's not quite right, and I've been teaching a seminar and an atheist student was expressing just the point of view that your caller was expressing, that when he was a kid and they were saying this, he felt that he was kind of being excluded or pushed aside by the phrase under God.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a strong argument that that is at least a mild form of religious endorsement. I think it's extremely unlikely that the present Supreme Court is going to reach that result. And if President Bush makes appointments to the Supreme Court, it's going to become even more unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Good luck with your students. High school radio stations in Michigan may soon have to share airwaves with a company from Texas. Students and district officials are expressing concern, though. Texas company broadcasts on other radio stations and has religious programming. Joining us now to talk about this story is Ryan Fishman, a junior at Andover High School in Bloomfield, Michigan. He's also the operations manager at WBFH, his high school's radio station. He's with us by phone from the radio station at his school, and it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you for having me join you this afternoon.
Do you know why the company in Texas is interested in broadcasting on your airwaves?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that high school and college radio stations, that airtime is public airtime. It's the public airwaves. And so I believe it's if they're not broadcasting 12 hours a day with live DJs, that's when it becomes open to companies like RB Schools, for example, the company who did want to spend some time on our frequency from 9 o'clock at night when we signed off to 3 o'clock in the afternoon when we would sign back on. And also,
so this is an FCC. This is an FCC regulation. If you don't program 24 hours a day, you may be forced to share your time.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I guess my assumption is that this is such an attractive frequency because you've got kids listening and you've got, you know, people in the community listening, and perhaps that's their way of getting their message out, and kids maybe are who they're targeting.
So you feel that this could be a conflict of the separation of church and state?
I do, yes.
So you would have kids doing the programming they do on the radio station. It's a little unusual, by the way. I know that there are more than a dozen in Michigan high schools that have radio stations. That's a little unusual.
But right, there are a lot of them. But, for example, let's say it was a Thursday at 9 o'clock, somebody signed off the airwaves, and a kid somewhere in the area is listening and expecting to hear more of what we call ours is Oakland County's best variety, and just kind of, you know, to work to or to listen to, and all of a sudden, you know, a religious belief comes on and kind of starts just broadcasting one belief, one side, and it's not something that they would expect on the radio station. So I think when you have kids signing off and saying, you know, it's Bloomfield Hills Community Radio, this is the school district's radio station, and then 5 minutes later someone signs on with, you know, broadcasting about a religious view, that's where it becomes a separation of church and state issue.
And I gather this is going to be decided down the road by an appeal to the FCC.
I would assume that's probably what they're going to do. Unfortunately, the issue for them is that if they wanted to share time with us, it has to be filed 45 days before our license renewal is up,
mm-hmm.
And they failed to do so. But there is still the possibility that they could get on our frequency, but we're trying to pump up our programming here so we do have 12 hours of DJs, or at least tracked programming, you know, syndicated programming, I guess is what you might call it.
Ryan, it sounds like you may have to decide between a career in broadcasting and the law. You're doing pretty well in both. Thanks very much for being with us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Ryan Fishman is a junior at Andover High School in Bloomfield, Michigan, the operations manager at WBFH, his high school's radio station. He joined us by phone from the station at the school, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Kent Greenewalt is still with us, and let's get another caller on the line. This is Trent, who joins us from Blytheville, Arkansas.
Yes, I wanted to call and say that I think it's very important for God to be a part of both the school system and the textbooks.
And so specifically in terms of these issues that we've been talking about, how would that be expressed?
Well, I think it's important for people to realize that even if a person does not believe in God, he is expressing a religious point of view. And so when you write a textbook and you neglect to mention that most of humanity believes in a supreme being of some type, then you are doing a disservice to the students and to the community.
But is that, is that appropriate for teaching comparative religion, or, you know, when you get to health and science issues, is it different?
Well, in the standpoint of comparative religion, the job of the government is not to endorse a religion, but rather to present the fact that the different religions exist, and included among those would be the scientific views such as evolutionary theorists, and also the agnostic and atheist points of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to mention that there are many different ways of looking at religious views, but that all of these are indeed religious views.
Okay. Trent, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And we have to wrap up with you, Kent Greenewalt, but I wanted to ask, obviously we're getting a lot of calls from parents and teachers who say they do want values to be expressed, at least in some form, in public school. Obviously, we're also getting calls from people who are very concerned about that. Is there a middle road?
Well, just to pick up on what the last caller said, if you taught about the Renaissance and didn't teach anything about the Reformation, that would be a gross distortion of history. It would understate the importance of spiritual things in the lives of people and cultures. If you're teaching about the Reformation, you've got to say something about what Protestants thought and what the Catholic position was. But what the textbook shouldn't do is to take a position that the Protestant view is right or the Catholic view is right. And I think that I agreed with a lot of what the caller said, that there should be teaching about religion in various courses. But I think I disagreed when he suggested that science is itself a form of religion. I think that's wrong. I think it operates in a different way. It gets evidence in a different way. Scientific findings may conflict with some religious views, but that doesn't make science a religion. So I think to bundle that together was a mistake.
Okay. Thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed being on.
And good luck with the book when it comes out.
Thank you very much.
The book is Does God Belong in Public Schools? It's soon to be published. And Ken Greenewalt is also a professor at Columbia Law School.